Welcome to a podcast of Impossible Things, with me, Caleb Woodbridge.
With me, Swithin Dobson.
And with me, James Willits.
Our regular commentator, Peter, is away on holiday at the moment, so we've recruited a new guest commentator for this week. Yes, Donald the Dalek will be joining us throughout this podcast to issue his opinions and views on the latest episode. Isn't that right, Donald? Yeah, I think he agrees. Okay. Right, yeah, we get it, Donald, don't worry. We will obey. We will respect the Dalek Empire. So, what did you think of this week's episode, The Poison Sky?
Yeah, I thought it was reasonable. I like the idea, which comes on to later, that the Santarans weren't actually just invading to conquer the Earth again, like every other generic monster, but was actually seemingly had a purpose fitted in with the fact that they're losing the war with the Rutons and they need a planet to have more clones so they can fight the Rutons better, which I thought was quite nice, although I didn't think it impacts the story massively in the way it's done, but I like that. James?
I thought that there were still weak points in it, but at the same time, I found it really enjoyable, and I thought that there were some really great geek out moments, which I... At points, I was very close to cheering, which, you know, it doesn't happen very often. But, yeah, I really enjoyed myself watching this.
Yeah, after being a little lukewarm about last week's episode, which I enjoyed, but I felt relied on several fairly well-worn tropes, the everyday object going evil and stuff, I didn't feel it perhaps introduced enough of the customary Doctor Who sparkle to those things to make it original and set it apart. But I really enjoyed this episode. I felt it built on the first one, and I think it shows the advantages of the two-part format, which is something we will discuss further as we go along. Donald, what's your view on this week's episode? Have you got an opinion? He'll reserve his opinion until later, so we'll
get on
with the watching the episode. Hit the play button, and away we go.
What, Doctor Who? You don't say. Big smoke. Oh, here we go. I'm bringing you back to Earth. Fantastic wooden delivery there again. As we got the recap from last week. Unfortunately, we don't have previously on X-Men to start it off like you do on Heroes, which is a shame.
Heroes has previously on X-Men?
No, it has previously on Heroes, but it sounds like it's going to have previously on X-Men. That's classic.
Annoying American guy.
Yeah.
Clone Martha.
Clartha.
Clartha. Oh, dear.
Yeah, and Cardiff masquerading as London, just around the corner from our friend's house.
Oh, yeah, it is, isn't it? I have some time with a decent voice.
And now the Galactic Harker.
Podcast!
And they're about to kill Bernard Cribbins! How evil can you get?
That is the most evil.
That
thing.
Is pretty evil.
It
and
is.
Straight into the theme tune. No mixing it up a little beforehand. We're just going straight into it.
It was a good cliffhanger. I thought one of the good things about it is you've got a real sense of threat. It is something big you can't see.
Yeah.
The Doctor can immediately save the day.
Yeah, it is a different cliffhanger. It's not something on this person which happens to whip out.
Yeah.
But,
yeah. One of the things I like about the story is that it takes him a long time from this point to sort everything out.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that with the two episodes, you've got more time for it to be harder for the Doctor. And
yes!
Here comes
there was some discussion about why the windshields and the windows weren't immediately smashed.
Yeah.
There you go, obviously you need an axe to do it.
Although the thing is though, with windscreens, they don't smash like that.
No.
They got resin inside, so they don't smash up. Although it's obviously some silicon-based thing again.
There's a nice sense of pace here with cutting to unit and all the action.
Although it looks like someone's bled on the screen.
I'm not sure what special effect they used for that, but I think they could have got a better one.
It's like the red from the Mask of Mandragora just sort of appeared on the screen.
And
we have Chloe and Martha. Seemingly no one noticing someone hacking into the system.
Yes.
Alert, alert.
I wonder whether the password was still backwards. The medical expert for UNIT has NATO Security Clearance 1. Not sure why she would need that, but...
Well, you don't know, really.
I wonder whether that's the same taxi from the Runaway Bride and...
Well, you've got to notice with
other episodes... Whether it's the standard BBC Wales taxi.
Transferring apparently spelt wrong. I was informed when I watched this. But it can't be real, I mean, nothing transfers that fast.
No.
I mean, that's ridiculous. You're waiting for a small file on the interweb and it takes forever. Obviously unrealistic. This is Martha Clone being obviously clone-like.
Unit's live mainframe.
From the mobile phone! Looks into space. Ah, oh, nice bit ship here for the
Centaurus. Yeah, the special effects shots are really nice.
It's really quite cool.
And back up to the Centaurus. Success. The operative has the necessary information.
Good work for a female. Some nice intergalactic bigotry.
Oh, the Centaurus are great, aren't they? Oh dear. Oh dear, oh dear. The geeky guy just being an imbecile. Oh, what do we think about the use of the fake TV broadcasts, news broadcasts?
I think it's good, but I don't think it'll ever rival the stuff that they did for Shaun of the Dead, which was just brilliant.
But why do you have to show the mouths so closely? Just slightly annoying.
Presumably there must have been quite a lot of people who died in their cars when the gas went off, and that's conveniently skated out.
Yes.
We need a big body count. We want Resurrection of the Dark body count. That's what we want. Which I sadly counted, and there was 51, I think I remember rightly, deaths of humanoids in the story.
So if I think that qualifies for this week's Ming Mong Award.
Yes! Come on! Ming Mong Award!
Geekiest comment.
Nice bit of character development there that
Donna gets a key.
Donna a key.
Yeah, in the middle of people dying.
The key thing has never been consistent because back in, I think it was The Daleks, the second story, apparently the TARDIS has like 21 different holes to put a key in, and if you get the wrong one, it doesn't work and it kills you, which has been neglected ever since, pretty much. But yeah, it's fine. Oh, Clone Martha again.
It's got this. I do like it that things don't go exactly to plan for the Doctor.
Or do they? And he...
Well, I think with the TARDIS disappearing,
that's unintentional.
Okay. Well, no, he says later on that he wants the TARDIS to go there so he can send Donna up.
Yeah.
Well, he wanted to be able to go up there himself.
Yeah, I think that's right.
He didn't want to put Donna at risk alone up there.
It's quite good technology for the Centaurus that can actually steal the TARDIS with those transport things. And I think we're going to get a short clip of... is it Billy... No, is that later on? Billy Piper appears.
Not just yet.
Got the pink lighting, because pink is obviously bad.
Purple.
Lilac. Lilac, I think. Okay, we'll be mentioning this, like... But it's really good that the Doctor actually doesn't sort things out immediately and doesn't go to plan. I was just thinking it was an interesting time now just to discuss a two-part format because we only get kind of three a season, really. How we think this works in relation to the standalone ones and what general thoughts are.
I do think that it allows the story to develop more, and there's a tendency in the single episodes for the resolutions to be often a bit abrupt. Although, to be fair, that sometimes happens even in the two-part stories, such as Rise of the Cybermen, where the Doctor just punches in this number and then all the Cybermen's heads explode.
Yeah, I think that was more of a bad execution of the last episode rather than the format itself.
Yeah, but certainly when done well, the... when used well, the two-part format does allow more room to breathe and explore things.
I also think from a budgetary point of view, doing more two-parters makes a lot more sense because you've got more money to spend over the episodes and you get economies of scale. And if you've got the same actor in two episodes, it's not going to cost double the amount to get them to do two episodes. And I think that would give you more leave to do some more alien-based stories. Alien world-based stories.
I think if they did one more two-parter per series, that might perhaps be a slightly better balance of...
What do you think, James?
I think that they haven't particularly used the two-part format that well, consistently anyway. And I think that I would rather see two-part stories that worked really well than more single-part stories where they do have to rush it. But I think certainly stuff like The Family of Blood, that could have been a one-part story.
Do you reckon?
I think so. I think that that could... I think that definitely that could have been two standalone storylines with the Doctor being human and... The Scarecrow people could have been a different storyline completely. This is nice that...
And there is a rose.
Yes, Rusty Davies' attempt at a story arc. And failing miserably yet again.
Well, we don't know that yet.
It's always build up to the last story, isn't it? It's like, just to put a clip in. You know?
I mean, there are other things that seem to be hinting. You've got the planets going.
Yeah, but it's not a proper story. It's just building up to the last...
I mean, it's not his delta because it's aimed at the keeping the casual audience on board. It's a deliberate choice not to do anything too involved.
Yeah, but I think the idea of trying to build up the last episode basically comes from the problem with the formatting. They've got to try and keep something a bit more interesting throughout the series to people to pick up upon, because the single standalone episodes you just can't do it with. I mean, I would revert to having 5 two-parters and a 3-parter at the end, but I'm old school.
Yeah, I think what it ends up being is they...
reference.
They tend to make the two-parters the ones that are meant to be more deep. I think that quite often those are the most uninteresting ones because they can't do deep very well.
Oh dear.
So I'd rather say
I like the way the Doctor just changes channels.
That bit was a nice bit of dialogue, possibly up there with the unlimited rice pudding of the Remembrance of the Daleks. That was nice. Behold.
I'm surprised they don't reference Invasion of Time and the fact that they almost invaded Gallifrey.
Someone made reference to, later on we see the Earth being kind of, the sky kind of blowing up, being on fire. It looks very similar to how Gallifrey looks, one of the scenes from Invasion of Time. Is that postcard for the end?
I think that's really a bit much. Oh, yeah. It's the same trick as in Rise of the Cybermen, communicating with the companion on sea. Although, I'm not sure what he expects her to do, because he just rings her up later, so this seems slightly pointless then.
I suppose she could have rung Martha.
Have a look in the phone book.
The phone book.
Has it got unit as one of the numbers?
Yeah.
This was a bit... Oh, dear. We've got Nerd being a complete jerk.
Yeah, although at least everyone treats him as the complete jerk he is.
Yeah.
That is true.
He does get his comeuppance, as it were.
He does. Although I would have liked a bit of violence from the...
from One Punch Man.
Yeah, it would have been quite...
I would have liked him to try and start a fight back from there, considering that these are meant to be the world's smartest people or whatever.
You don't look it.
No, and considering the fact that they've got unlimited resources at their disposal and they're so smart, I would have loved it if they had come up with something that, you know... that defeated this threat by themselves, rather than having to have the Doctor step in. That would have been great had the Doctor not actually been the one who saved the day.
Well, see, that was quite interesting, was the fact, I kept thinking throughout, you know, they're on, going to the ship, it's like, why don't you just go to the Rattigan Academy and use the teleport machine?
Yeah.
Why not just go there? You did it last time, get a... just go. It's okay, we can help you. Go to therapy. See a counsellor.
I do think that you do have some... they do manage to create some glimmerings of sympathy for him a little bit in this episode, more so than in the first one.
Yeah, but that wasn't difficult.
No, but I think that his character could have worked if you'd have given more of a sense of him not being entirely obnoxious, if he was just had a bit more personable, you could made him a bit more doctorish in a certain sense, rather than just someone you want to punch, then it would have made it that much more interesting.
And it would have been quite interesting if he'd had, say, like one defender in the Rattigan establishment who could see. You know, he had like a convert. In a similar way that Nida was always at the side of Davros. You know, in that sense, you've got a really hardcore kind of follower.
Mm.
Oh, that was ridiculous. I'm clever.
Although it is funny seeing him reduced to stamping his foot and seeing what the big child he is.
He is, but...
yeah, and you've got the
world landmarks.
Yes.
Yes, we have lots of deaths again, but we don't see.
Although I do think this works quite well, just sketching in the global scene and so on.
But obviously the world is America and Britain. You know, it's great.
Well, you had Sydney and...
well, I suppose from the BBC News.
Is
some are calling it the end of days, the final Torchwood episode. But not the same end of days, apparently.
Instead of using gaffer tape, like they said on the 1950s Cold War film, little films, he's using polyfill. Oh, here we go.
The ham-fisted ecological message.
Oh, dear. Yes.
Unfortunately, you know, it doesn't really work because it's a totally different thing. Alien attack by poisonous gas and environmental problems are not the same thing.
And the device they use it for actually kind of helps. So
that must have...
Up
until the point...
I mean, that was the idea of his hand in. I'd also thought it'd be nice with the Atmos thing to actually understand why people would have taken it on board. In a similar way, it was a bit annoying because the Age of Steel, where the whole point of the Cybermen was the fact is they unintentionally went down this line of becoming mechanised.
Another nice scene for Catherine Tate. Their strategy for showing that she is, in fact, a proper actress seems to be to give her a scene in which she cries each episode.
Oh, and obviously the little geeky kid cries towards the end as well to show he's a really quality actor. But again, we see here Bernard Cribbins having more personality than any of the companions from the last 3 years in about 10 seconds.
But she is good though, and the scenes coming up with her on board the spaceship.
Yeah.
Good.
Oh, there we go.
I mean, what was that woman doing? Why was that woman just wandering around in the smoke?
Because
going to the shops.
Fun. And here we have Clone Martha.
Clartha.
Who could really have had clone written on her head? Because it was that obvious. Some sort of artificial heavy element we can't trace. You've seen anything like it? Sometimes adventures. This isn't just polishing. They need this
gas. But unlike many gases, this is actually lighter than the air, so it rises, which is good, because otherwise at the end he would have burned everyone alive.
But the thing is, you have the gas on the ground anyway.
Yeah, no, you don't. You see, it's not a dense gas.
Yeah, but you see it.
Yeah, but that was not, yeah.
Oh, it's not proper. It's not proper. Oh, dear.
That's the classic
unit tactic. If in doubt, shoot it.
Nuke it.
Did you catch the reference to North Korea now online?
Oh.
In the rest of countries.
I didn't catch that, no.
That's quite... Oh, why does that Santoro not have a decent voice? Just sounds like a guy in a suit. Which he is.
Ooh. Oh, no, here's the... France. India. Pakistan. China.
North Korea! Online, Kim Jong-il is really a nice guy.
It didn't mention Russia, strangely.
No, but they're the new enemies again, aren't they?
They've lost all theirs.
Yeah, they're all floating around on the black market.
Countdown to extinction.
A nice yes-no interface. Mainframe. Good.
Good job graphics. It didn't come up with, are you sure?
And the screen turns off dramatically. Well, did we?
So was the idea to send lots of nukes at it at the same time?
Mm. Yeah.
I thought so, I was just making sure. Missiles wouldn't even dent that ship, so why the Sontaran so keen to stop you? Any ideas? Which is quite strange, actually. Their ship can stop multiple nuclear missiles, said the armoury is so rubbish that a bullet goes through it. Mm. It's not very good on monster kind of armour, is it, really?
Nice shots of them all.
I'm heading off now, so I shall see you next weekend.
Yeah. And a cameo appearance from my housemate Tom there. Oh, unit soldiers.
Getting bored.
Yeah, red caps, which is the equivalent of red shirts.
Red shirt. Oh, here we go. They're going to attempt to shoot them, but it's not going to work. Murray Gold again. He wants to get some atmosphere, so he uses his drum beats. Yeah. You can tell I really like that guy. The doctor trying to look appalled. Why did they use that effect then? That just seems a bit strange. Well, the firing of the lasers.
Mm.
Just was a bit strange, really. It's unnecessary.
Ooh, I like it.
And they've
though.
Shot Ross. No, nice. We liked Ross.
Ross is dead.
I enjoyed the fact that the lasers go around corners. I think that's pretty cool.
Mm, I suppose. Oh, the doctor complaining about calling people not by their real names, but by their position. Trying to show himself as being different from the military again. Not Greyhound 40, but he is. Whatever he's called again? Rubbish with names.
Ross,
that's that guy. Strap onto all stations.
Retreat. Order imperative. Immediate retreat. And a nice action sequence. Some Tyrans coming and shooting people.
In the back.
That's not honourable, surely. Why don't they just... Isn't this entire idea to
be... I found this very enjoyable.
This is quite nice, how they report for duty and then just shoot them.
Nah.
Well, yeah, because you've turned their weapons off.
I did think they enjoyed this just that bit too much.
Yeah.
It just seemed to be... obviously, warlike can be like killing people. But... Not Star, what's the other guy called? I can ask you names. I should have a script. Oh dear. Again, what, just a bit over the top.
Oh, it's gas masks, isn't it? That's what they're wearing on their head.
Hey, Sir Alistair.
Sir Alistair Gordon and Lethbridge Stewart. What's doing in Peru? Maybe it's all that pollution in Peru, which I didn't know existed until this morning. And they're mining things in some place in Peru.
This is something we heard about in church this morning. Tying into the ecological theme.
Ooh. Geek Kid's crying. He's failed. Oh, here we have the classic scene that the geeky guy has been used by the Centaurans, as we all expected to be the case, and didn't really care. And using them to get Atmos in the on Earth. As I said last week, it would be quite nice if he actually tried to use the Centaurans himself, in a similar way that Tobias Vaughan tries to use the Cybermen in the invasion, but
it's obviously not that bright.
No, obviously he's not. A boy genius is obviously not that clever.
He trusted the evil alien invaders.
He was so clever, obviously. Oh, ingenious there, he's teleported back.
But no one follows him.
Oh, no,
why? Send one after him, shoot him in the head, teleport back, close down the teleport.
Yeah, because the Doctor could have used the teleporters. Oh dear, and he's crying again, like a big child.
Pull yourself together, you big girl's blouse. Cordine signal. It's a good gimmick.
By shouting again. He hasn't done it that much this episode so far. Fortunately.
I think it's a reasonable thing for him to be shouting this time.
Yeah, I suppose so.
That guy is being an idiot.
Oh, and yeah, as you were saying, mentioned before, James, you know, why didn't he just ring Donna before?
Ooh. This is a good little sequence.
Donna has something useful to do. When the Doctor reveals to her that you are my secret weapon.
There is a good sense of danger of the companion alone on the spaceship.
Yeah, that does make it quite a good idea, because a Doctor you always expect to win, which in generally does. With the companion you pretty much expect to lose, and the Doctor to rescue, which doesn't actually happen, which is quite nice as a difference, really.
But they feel more vulnerable.
Yeah.
Good job it wasn't looking at the service.
Well, no. Fair, that's not unreasonable. You're guarding it, you expect people to come from the outside rather than the inside.
It's a bit like the old sci-fi cliche that any guard can be rendered instantly unconscious just by a quick tap to the back of the head.
Yes.
This is a nice shot.
Oh, just yes.
The low down one.
Nice low shot there to pick up the mallet, which we've never seen before.
We use it all the time to hit the TARDIS with.
Yeah. I don't really know. It's just kind of seeing it getting hit.
It's like the bit in Armageddon with the... did I mention this last week?
Don't think so.
No. Oh, where the crazy Russian guy is hitting the International Space Station with his mallet.
Oh, right.
Back of the neck. Good line.
Some very good lines in this.
Yes, it's quite clever. But isn't this just like a talking sat-nav system? The Doctor, you know, turn left.
Oh, no, turn right.
Perhaps it means something.
Ooh. Quite a nice line there. You need three fingers like a Centauran. You've got five. Doesn't matter. Oh, the Doctor trying to eat his mobile phone.
Tasty.
Indeed. Oh, here we go. The gas masks go out.
Yeah.
Getting serious. And clone Martha was having clone written on her head again.
it is good in rewatching it, just seeing the different layers to the Doctor's agenda, that you that he knows what Martha's doing, but he's keeping not drawing attention to it because he wants her to stop units launching the missiles. Ooh. So he's both keeping an eye on her and...
Yay! Fantastic line there. Are you my mummy?
Nice back reference.
Ah, yes. But Eunice has got a good arsenal, so we're going to win. I don't think it was slightly strange, although it is fair that the unit will have a big arsenal of different bullets. Mm.
This is a good speech for him.
Oh, yes.
It's a nice counterbalance, to some extent, to the Doctor always having a go at it.
Yeah. That's also true. He's going to show the good side.
Hmm. Yeah, the fight. Humans fight back.
Yes, the great ability of the humans.
Yeah, the Independence Day one is brilliant.
Oh, and it's the balance.
This really was the highlight of the show for me. The fact they used it like that, I just thought was absolutely ingenious. But I just love it as a concept, the huge floating...
They've got sky base, basically.
Yeah.
Floating sky.
Yeah. Or one of the S.H.I.E.L.D. helicarriers from the Marvel comics.
Or it just sounds like it's a classic sci-fi thing, isn't it? It's like,
yeah.
It's like Sonic the Hedgehog had the flying battery.
Yeah.
Which is a huge kind of ship as well. It does look very cool, though, and they've got some nice effects. Fantastic. And you have now coming up the great laser, which is from the Sycorax.
The Death Star laser.
Yeah, the Death Star laser from the Sycorax. Beautiful. Look at that. Zoom. And the Centaurans are getting mashed. Nice bazooka there.
Yeah, nice action.
Last time we saw a bazooka, I think it was in Battlefield. With the with units.
Lovely that the Centaurans get their ass absolutely handed to them by UNIT. No wonder they're losing the war.
Yeah, because Centaurans are supposed depressing. To be the best soldiers in the galaxy. And their armour is rubbish. It doesn't work.
As soon as the Coeur d'Alene signals, once they get round that, then it's they're a bit rubbish, really. Just you'd think, they managed to shoot some people. But... you'd think that the armour would be able to deflect bullets at least.
I do like the lighting before the main lights come on there. Mm. It'd be quite good if that didn't work, because I think it's so much more atmospheric. It looks like, I don't know, if it wasn't so dirty, well, it is, it's a hospital. Just white walls.
Yeah.
You know. And now they're coming up to find the real Martha. Which is obviously not defended.
Yeah, which seems a bit convenient.
Well, slightly.
But they do justify it in terms of the Centaurans are wanting to.
Don't you think the real Martha there looks like the old Frankenstein films? With like the big white. Kind of.
She can't think. That's nuclear either.
What'd you say, nuclear?
Nuclear.
Nuclear, dear. When did you know? Are you? Well, right from the start. Yes, you should have a clover in your head.
Why not in front of Captain Jack?
I don't understand that reference.
What was reference directly to? What, in front of Captain Jack?
Don't wear a reference to being a clone in front of
a t-shirt with clone on. But perhaps because he'd want to...
sleep with both of them?
Maybe it's his fetish, you don't know. Quite possible with John Byron, you never know. That's a rubbish ringtone.
You can instantly
that's also a rubbish explanation. It was an alien with a head! It had a head on it and some faces and there were features.
Oh, okay, here we go, James, this is your favourite scene of the whole show. Come on, give us your thoughts.
Oh, this is... quite interesting. Just the way they don't fear death, which they make a nice use of later on when the Doctor gets up on the spaceship.
But here we go, we have Martha and Carter.
This is ridiculous.
I felt this worked appealing to the memories that she had
I don't think that would happen, though. I don't think the programming would be overcome by memories, because I don't think that they would have given her... I don't think she'd just have those feelings, even if she did have the memories.
Well, it usually... when there are clones in science fiction, this usually happens. See,
Boomer
in Battlestar Galactica, for example.
But I think that it's ridiculous. I just really dislike it. Maybe it's because there's two of them.
Two Marthas.
Yeah. And maybe it's because, you know, one of them dies, but that still doesn't get rid
not
of them.
Not both of them.
Yeah. But I don't know. I just... it really didn't work for me, the conversation between the two of them. I think possibly it could have been handled better, but...
I just think, you know, if you've filtered them out for so much time already to do your job, why then it just kind of appears again when someone just mentions...
Yeah.
A lie? Just seems slightly odd.
Well, she is dying, so she might have... does change your perspective a bit.
Nice mellow music there from Murray. I do like him sometimes.
Worst death ever.
Just drop your head forward. It's like a chav, isn't it? You know, they look at you to drop their heads. It wouldn't be great if the head just fell off.
That's creepy that, you know, it was stole the ring.
Yeah, oh, yeah, oh. Maybe we're trying to pay for the funeral.
Maybe.
Oh dear, here comes the twins.
But the doctor will get her back nice and quickly. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Those are those nice little scenes I don't think you'd get if it was a single parter. In this respect, he's taking his time again here to get things back together.
Yeah. The teleport for Eunice is quite nice.
Yeah, it looks quite cool. It reminds me of something, but I can't quite think what.
It's not really that long a story, is it?
What?
He's just said to Donna, yeah, there's two of them, it's a long story.
One of them got
she cloned. Was cloned. They cloned her, but it's dead now.
I like the way he just snatches the gun. But the comment
afterwards was stupid again. It's like, the doctor doesn't like military, he doesn't like guns, but he likes anything other than guns to destroy aliens.
As long as it's a gadget.
Yeah.
So do you think it's boring killing them with guns? He wants to be slightly more ingenious.
You can't kill me, I'm a genius.
Oh,
another reference to Donna being the doctor's wife.
Was it?
Yeah. They just said it could only be the doctor's wife.
Ooh, maybe the doctor's
wife. I missed that. So the planet, it's not looking good.
Looking a bit
worse for
wear. See, look, we've got all this gas and people assumingly dying in cars. But, not actually seeing it.
Well, it's Saturday tea time, or it was anyway.
So. I know, but there's not even a reference to, you know, at the end.
I mean, even on the newscast, he said the current death toll is estimated to be 2.5 million people.
Yeah.
Like that, you know. I mean, slightly better. Oh, the doctor's loving his gadgets here. Oh, but it just looks like he's making a homemade rocket.
Yeah.
At this point.
It would have been quite nice if, what's his face, Rattigan had helped with this here, since he helped build this technology.
I mean, this is where you could have used all of the other geniuses. If,
genii.
You know, genii. If the doctor could have come in and said, you know, this is what I need from you.
I was joking.
This is what I need from you. I need a device that will do that. They all started talking and then they helped rather than just go home and do nothing.
Yeah. Oh, here we go. The doctor's going to fire something into space.
Well, you can kind of see it.
You can see the London Eye.
You can see the major landmarks.
Yeah, he seems to be obsessed with seeing the major landmarks, but this is just a bit strange here. We have all the gas we've just seen on the ground, yet only the sky explodes and burns up.
But no one on the ground is hurt.
No, but the stupidest thing comes up here. I think you see the Empire State Building.
Yeah.
And it goes like below its the top of the spire, and it doesn't get burnt.
But if you take a look at that, that's just over the height of a house. Now it's just over the height of the Valiant.
It's just slightly convenient, isn't it?
Yeah. And coming up to the rest of the planet.
That looks like Coruscant off from Star Wars.
Yeah, it does.
Here we go. Look, the spire is at least 20 feet above it. And we have orchid, we have choir, and the sky goes blue, but we'll cut back now to... Oh no, maybe not. It does at some point.
Yeah, well, we'll put it down to his borrowed advanced Suntaran technology.
Yeah.
Now, it's an atmospheric converter, so it's not just setting it alight.
What's also good now is the Suntaran sort of stratagem one, or plan B.
Oh, yes.
It's not like, oh, we've lost, let's go home. Oh.
This is weird.
Here we go.
This is not just weird, but kind of horrible.
Just out of nowhere.
Just out of nowhere. Whoa.
Most improper, I'd say.
She's being demoted. Or promoted, I don't know.
Hey, maybe that's what she's trying for, you never know. That and... Oh,
yes, nice.
Suntaran Stratagem 1, kill them all.
Their dialogue is good. That's something Russell C. Davies commented on. Unlike the Daleks and the Cybermen, who are quite mechanical, you have the more expressive.
Now, this is quite interesting. Coming here, the Doctor says basically he's going to die because either Suntaran's going to kill him or he's going to get killed trying to kill the Suntarans. But he has to be given the choice. What do we think? Is there anything behind this, or do you think it's just a plot device?
He did always say, I mean, right from the introduction, he said that he was, you know, he was the version of the Doctor that always gave them a choice, but if they didn't take it, he wasn't merciful. Yeah. I mean, right from the Sycorax, you know, he was quite...
Although, I don't think they've been consistent with that. Particularly.
I don't know, because the Family of Blood, they got given the choice.
Yeah, that's
true. Sycorax got given the choice. Yeah. Have there been any other...
It goes right back to Rose with the Autons. He refuses to just throw the anti-plastic straight in. He goes and speaks to them, invoking the Shadow Proclamation.
Yeah.
I demand an audience with the Nestine consciousness. But yeah, it is a good motif.
Oh, nice effects yet again.
Yeah.
Get ready for battle mode. Oh, the Doctor's appeared. General Stahl, you know what this is. There's one more option. You can go.
Just leave. Suntaran High Command, we never know what happened here. I kept on expecting them to make some reference to the Suntarans having lost their home planet or something like that.
Yeah.
Or clone world.
Yeah, but they did... I do like the way this doesn't cut any mustard with the Suntarans because of their very different attitudes, better to die in battle, sort of thing. Mm. They call the Doctor's bluff.
Cupids.
Now, if they're fired now, instead of doing their...
That's a bit of a rubbish-looking gun. It reminds me of the gun from the Mine Robber. This little thing just prods out.
Small man syndrome again.
Yes! I bet they're left-handed as well. Suntarana.
And the convenient heroic self-sacrifice by supporting characters, saving the Doctor's life again.
It's nice also that they stop as soon as they see that it's him, almost as though they know that the Doctor's not actually going to do anything. Mm. But that...
And it's a nice payoff to the Suntaha, where he does that final Suntaha.
Yes. It's quite good. And it also saves him from potentially being a companion, which is a good thing. The Doctor's surprised to be alive. Oh, it's quite good here. Donna comes and slaps him.
The difference between Martha and...
Martha's just cozying up to his shoulder, because she still really likes the Doctor, obviously.
Is that the shot from the Christmas Invasion of London? Very similar, anyway.
Now, Swithin, you had some problems with this, didn't you? You found that it was...
Yeah, it's like, yeah, we're all going to be on bikes. It was just a bit strange. You got the idea. You've got, assuming we're all causing global warming and that, you got this Atmos thing which helps and stops it. You know, stops all the carbon dioxide coming out. And in the previous episode, you have the Doctor saying, ah, yes, but even this is the case. You've still got lots of people driving and you're going to deplete the Earth's resources. And then you have this bit where it's just great that people aren't really driving. I just don't think it was a particularly coherent environmental message.
Well, I think it's an understandable reaction, just as people didn't use the underground after the 7/7 attacks.
It was just a glowing reference to, like, Pete, the kids are on their bikes because they're away from their televisions and playing evil computer games.
I think that it's not actually, in that case, a reference to environmentalism. I think it's just a reference to the fact that they're not using their cars and therefore they've got to find another way to get round.
But the whole premise of the thing was kind of an environmental kind of story in the backdrop.
I think that was.
It doesn't really have anything interesting to say apart from boo cars.
Basically.
Martha, interestingly, has got a new jacket which looks exactly the same as the old one but in a different colour.
This is potentially the most annoying scene in the whole story. And the fact is that Martha stays.
I like Martha.
You think it's going to work with two female characters?
It'll be interesting to see how it works.
He keeps his hand around.
Yeah. It's handy. Yes! Come on!
I like the way they have a cliffhanger into the next story.
Yeah, they don't really do that often these days, do they?
Which is quite fun.
Ooh, not supposed to go home. And the trailer for the next week.
Cheesy swooshes.
An old geezer. Hello, who's this? Is it me? I just think Firefly when I saw that.
Is it Buffy? Is it Claire from Heroes? I can't quite tell the difference between these blondes.
She doesn't have a bigger, as big a jaw as the one from Heroes.
She's my daughter.
Hello, Dad. Hello, Dad.
Oh, yes.
God, blimey.
I can read and deliver a line. So, what's our thoughts of next week, just as based on the trailer?
It looks terrible.
I'll be interested to see how well it works or not. I think it's got potential as a story, the novel Father Time, in which the Doctor adopts a daughter, is really good, and I think
It's adopted.
Miranda in that. Okay. I think it's one of those things that could be done really, really well. Or could be done quite appallingly.
I suspect it will be done appallingly.
Oh, you pessimist.
Basically, I'm of the opinion it's either going to be the best story of the season so far, or it's going to be an absolute pile. It really is.
Yeah.
But more importantly, what does Dalek think?
Dalek has
turned himself off.
Sad
times. Going to sleep mode. He wasn't that boring, was it?
Oh, well.
Never mind. So, what was everyone's concluding thoughts of the...
Concluding thoughts?
To the story. James?
Not a fan, then, Donald the Dalek.
Do you want to exterminate Martha?
Yeah.
You're in good company.
I still think that it was really enjoyable.
It was a good episode.
I think that there were some really nice touches, and... I know that you guys really liked Daleks in Manhattan, but I really, really didn't. And I think that it's nice that that was much better. And I think that, for me, it shows progression.
Yeah, for Helen Raynor.
Yeah. And that's good, because I'm not sure that some of the other writers are progressing. Some of them, I feel, are possibly staying the same. But bad. I genuinely quite enjoyed that. I thought that it worked as a two-parter. I thought that, you know, that I think the same things that I say every week. I think Donna really works. I think that the special effects were really good. I think that their relationship was really nice, and I just thought it was quite a fun episode.
Yeah,
which is good.
As I said before, it's okay. I wasn't a huge fan of it. Obviously, as I said before, it executes everything quite nicely, and it all worked. Production values are pretty good. And I did like the idea that the Centaurans, as I said before, were trying to turn into a clone planet. Having said that, I don't think necessarily expanded the story massively in the second episode, which they rarely do. I did like, a few of the scenes were quite good, especially the Doctor not sorting anything out immediately, as happens in the single parters, and kind of going wrong. And also quite nice of the enemies for once, their plan A fails, so they go to stratagem one to try and, if we can't do this, well, we're going to kill them anyway. It was quite nice, you know, you've got an extra layer there as such.
It would have been interesting to see how the new Tool'da unit coped with a full-on invasion, whether they would have been able to throw it back.
Yeah, I was slightly disappointed in terms of my expectations of the story, because I was expecting something more along the lines of big troops of Centaurans landing on Earth and unit having to fight off armies of them, rather than the skulking around with a sneaky plan.
But I suppose that, you know, every invasion so far has been a large-scale invasion, so it was quite nice to see just not an infiltration, but, you know, a small-scale assault, a tactical assault, rather than, you know, let's just occupy everything at once.
Yeah. Since they used the massive technology in episode one for the adipos, I was slightly disappointed that they didn't use that at any point to for the Centaurans, for a big invading army of them versus unit soldiers, which was fairly high on my fan wish list of things. But that said, I did really enjoy what they did do. I did feel that some of the themes as the environmental issue and the military ethic thing were a bit underdeveloped. They were just didn't really do anything particularly interesting with them, but as an adventure story, it rattled along. It was really good fun. Some good lines, some nice bits of continuity and so on. So I really enjoyed this episode, and not having been entirely convinced by the first part of the story, I really think that as a two-parter as a whole, it worked.
Where do you think this comes so far in the series, ranking-wise? Do you think it's getting better as the series is progressing, or...?
I think it's been fairly consistent.
Yeah, I think it's been consistently... I think it's been consistently good.
Yes.
I don't think it's been great, but I think it's been averaged good. But consistently. I don't think there's been a single one that I've thought that was terrible. Mm. But also there hasn't been a single one that I thought that was, you know, absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
But I don't know whether I have ever really felt like that in any of the seasons, that there have been, you know, real highs and lows. It has always just seemed to be.
Well, the Charm Doctor Dances surely stood out in the first season.
Yes, true.
I think...
level of writing, isn't it?
In every series, I think the Stephen Moffat episodes stand out.
Yes, the two parts that's coming up is looking very
forward to
exciting.
Silence in the Library.
Yes.
I do think... that there are certain episodes that tend to stand out. By this point in most series, you have generally had at least one standout episode, in my opinion. I'm not sure we have yet. Next week perhaps has the potential to
Stand out being amazing or stand out like a sore thumb.
Yeah. I feel that with last series, the standout episodes included Blink and Human Nature.
Yeah. Those are definitely the best two stories.
And I think of the early ones, last series, Gridlock was also
I liked Gridlock.
A bit of a cut above the
I wasn't taking the Gridlock, but
It was nice that they did something different in Gridlock, and I think that's what they really need to do, and maybe next week
it
will
different.
Be
the
one that is
different,
slightly less conventional than these. But
I think consistently good, but without any instant classics so far this series is my summary.
I think, it has been consistent. I still think the Adipose one was terrible. but beyond that, I think it's been consistently average. but that's me.
Yes, that is you, Swithin. Okay, well,
pint half empty.
Yes, that's true. That is true.
Well, join us next week for The Doctor's Daughter, and
yes.
Maybe another appearance from Donald the Dalek.
A good friend.
Thank you for listening. If you want to get in touch, share your opinions, then we have a Facebook group, a podcast of impossible things. You can also subscribe to the blog, http://podcastofimpossiblethings.blogspot.com, or email us at impossiblepodcast@gmail.com. Thank you very much for listening. Tune in next week.